This is the Business of Apps podcast, bringing you actionable insights from the leaders of the global app industry and the world's fastest growing apps. You can find more app news, data, and analysis over at businessofapps.com.
Welcome to the Business of Apps podcast. On this show, we invite app industry professionals to cover various topics. We promise to do our best to keep it both insightful but brief. In this episode, we have Ritam Gandhi, founder of Studio Grapheme. Ritam, welcome to the Business of Apps podcast.
Thank you very much.
Terrific. Thank you for coming. Okay, what does it take to create an app? You remember a few years ago, we used to hear this catchy phrase, yep, there's an app for that. It was all about the novelty of mobile apps. Well, today, with several million mobile apps in the world, you don't hear that anymore. The days of that mantra are over. And today you wonder, how do you build an app to compete in a huge market to make sure it has a good potential to take off? So we invited Ritam to help us to tackle this tough question. But let's start off by talking about you, Ritam, and your background. Please tell us about yourself.
So I started my career working in the management consulting practice for Accenture. And I also worked as part of the systems integration and technology practice, working mostly with investment banks and commercial banks, building large-scale trading systems, and then subsequently after the financial crisis, helping them merge together. So it's large-scale technology projects. And throughout that time, I heard of people walking around and saying, hey, I have this great app idea, but I don't know how to get it off the ground. And I realized a lot of the services businesses would chase after the big corporates, the big enterprise business, but no one was trying to help the individual founder. To be candid, it's because they weren't financially lucrative clients potentially, but no one was going after them. And I thought, okay, well, what are the challenges these folks have? They have an idea. It's not just about developing an app. It's about understanding what is the purpose of the app. It's about understanding how to design it. It's about understanding how to get it built and advising them and being on their side. And so I decided to start Studio Grapheme. And the focus being that I wanted to help founders get their ideas off the ground and bring them to life instead of just talking about them.
All right, so let's talk about your company, Studio Grapheme. By the way, why graphene? Do you guys like physics? Because if I remember correctly, graphene is the material one atom thick, which you can actually pull together, create great new material, which doesn't exist in nature. Is this where the name came from?
It is. That is the graphene. A lot of, you know, it's people reach out to us and say, hey, do you work with graphene? And we don't. Well, actually, we did a project which did involve some graphene-based sensors. But yeah, we're not a graphene specialist. The reason that there's a fake reason and real reason.
All right.
The fake reason is it's all about that we want to be nimble but strong and flexible and the future material. The real reason is actually my sister set up a company called Studio Grapheme, but she decided she didn't want to use the name. And I was setting up Studio Grapheme, and I really, really liked the name. I really liked what it stood for, and I really liked the fact that what graphene stands for, really. And I thought that is a good representation of what we want our business to be. So that's a bit of a backstory to Studio Grapheme.
That's a cool story because, well, the name of the company tells a lot about the team that behind the project. So if you have a catchy name that makes people think, and especially if they know what graphene is, you're kind of in one club. Exactly. All right, let's talk about app design, right? What are the major components of an effective app design, and why do you believe these are specific essential ingredients to build a successful app? The ones you're using to create an app, like in every project you're working on.
Yeah, I think it's a very interesting topic because it's what is design? Is design the visual element? Is design how you think about it? Is it the user experience? And one of the things we realized was that we'd work with a number of founders or people who had app ideas who'd come to us with their pixel perfect guideline. So they'd say, you know, I want to use this color and I want this icon. Mm-hmm. And then there'd be a lot of debate with others, either the co-founding team or other members in the team about those kind of which icon to use or which color to use. And actually with everyone, we end up taking a step back or many steps back and we go back to what are the core goals that they are trying to achieve as part of their product that they want to build. You know, what is that single point of truth? And that's really the key piece of understanding what we're designing for. What is their goal? The second thing we talk about is this concept called impact mapping, which is there's a very nice small blue book, which actually describes it very well. But it's essentially making sure that you're aligning to your goals, to the actors, i.e. the user that's using it. And there is a purpose behind a feature that you're developing rather than just kind of feature greed. And then the third piece we talk about a lot is prototyping. And that's basically, you know, a high fidelity designer, a design of a screen. What's it actually going to look like in real life? Because a lot of the times you don't really understand what it is that you're building until sometimes you see it. And then, of course, we all know that, you know, you have subjective theories, but computers understand zeros and ones, very binary. So the specification and the detail behind every feature is key to make sure that things don't get lost in translation. You know, what you're thinking as a founder or an individual as an app idea versus what an engineer understands. You want to make sure that in that Chinese whispers process, you don't lose the important, salient, critical information and the objective detail. So we find these are four key elements, and we generally take a kind of step-by-step approach where we start with the highest level information. That's why we start with the goals. So we take that 50,000 foot view, then we kind of go into more detail, then more detail, and more detail. So that's generally our approach.
All right, so let's go a little bit deeper into each of these four components, starting with goal setting. I think people may have a problem with thinking in the right direction when it comes to creating a mobile app, because they're judging by the experience of using other apps. There's a specific app on the phone which they'll like, or certain components, certain features of that app they believe to be a good one. They may try to borrow those features, and it's hard for them to think holistically and start with the idea what exactly this app will be solving for their company, for their business. What will be the purpose? So how do you help them to kind of, as you're saying, step back, take a holistic view, and decide what's the goal of creating an app for their business?
So the key thing you mentioned was taking a step back, right? Because everyone kind of races forward, have this idea, I want to build these features, et cetera. And I think in the beginning, the whole point is what is the main purpose of your app? What are you solving for an individual? And what are the goals that you want to set for yourself as a business that you want to achieve? And those goals need to be very specific. They need to be very clear. There needs to be clear alignment between the stakeholders, and they need to be time bound, right? So you need to say, look, in 6 months, we want to get to a point where we have 5,000 users, right? So user acquisition becomes a goal, et cetera. So that goal setting, which is very clear and specific and time-bound, is critical, because that really informs everything. Until you have a clear set of goals, it's hard to know where you're going, right? If you don't know the destination, what's the point in talking about, I'll go right, I'll go left.
Right, exactly. Among these four ingredients, I think impact mapping is kind of a bit of a puzzle for me personally. Well, what is impact mapping specifically when you start working on a project? What do you solve with this part?
Yeah. So I think at the end of the day, we build an app because we want it to have an impact for an actor or an individual or a user. And we need to understand that if we are building, you know, if we're writing a user story to describe what a user should be able to do, that should map to an impact. If we're creating a feature that needs to be developed, it should have an impact. And the impact mapping is really a process by which you're always going back to the user. And you're kind of following that human-centered design strategy. You're going back to what is the impact for a user of what I'm doing and how does it align with the goals that I've set. So impact mapping is really, you know, when you see it visually, it's really just drawing almost the links or joining the dots between something you're building as an app feature and the impact it's having for the user. If you can't define the impact and value the impact, you shouldn't be building that feature.
Got it. So this is a long-term effort. It's not like something you're doing before you're creating an app. This is what you're going back over and over when you're creating the first, second, third, and so forth version of an app.
Correct.
And see the impact you're getting.
You're constantly aligning to an impact.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Prototyping. To be honest, when I hear the word prototyping, I see one of the prototypes of SpaceX, the next version of their rocket, the Falcon rocket. This is the prototype I can see in my mind, but you hear the word prototype.
Of course, that's in the hardware world, right?
That's a hardware analogy, which kind of sticks to your visual perception of the world when you think about a prototype these days. So prototype of an app. Well, what do you sketch out? Like basic features, the most general view how the app will look like?
So, you know, I think of, and why you, it's interesting you use a SpaceX example. I always think of anything you're building, whether it's software or hardware, right? There is, you're looking at it top down as, you want to try and make mistakes and learn without spending loads of money and time. You want to restrict your de-risk whilst spending less resources, whether it's effort or time. It's the same thing in architecture, right? You don't want to build the building and then realize it's being built incorrectly and throw it away. So you prototype by creating a model. SpaceX, you don't want to build a whole spaceship and find out that
it's
got errors.
Uh-huh.
And that's why you prototype. And I think it's the same logic in apps, right? You can build it and realize you made mistakes, but actually you want to get to a point where you are happy with it. You don't want to be able to, at least you want to give yourself a shot at putting something in front of a user, in front of your stakeholders, and giving them a chance to give feedback before you go out and build it. And that's really, in my mind, the purpose of prototyping is trying to mirror what it would be like in real life without building it in real life. So it's set of screens, in my opinion, and they're designed in a way that you would actually build them, and they're linked together through hotspots, so you can click through them and you essentially have a clickable prototype. That's the purpose.
So you want to go on the market with the app which doesn't have every imaginable feature you're dreaming about, but the ones you know for sure are there on purpose, will be helpful for people, will be working, and this is going to be a robust version 1.0, right?
Correct. Right.
Specification writing. I remember my days of working in the app development / app marketing company. And I remember there was a guy who was basically obsessed about specification writing. He was really meticulous of capturing every stage of app development and making sure like other folks who will be working on the project later may pick it up from a specific point and see what's going on, not being lost. But that was kind of a, you know, perspective of the internal inside the company when multiple people work on the same app. So specification writing, do you mean from the perspective of a client or just an internal work of your team?
It should be, in my mind, specification writing is about making sure that we have an understanding of what we want to build, but there is a handoff between the individual who has a set of requirements and their features and the person building, right? So most of the time, the specification isn't for any other person, a process other than to make sure that that handoff is as accurate as possible, right? And it is very rare that it's the same person as app idea, also the engineer building it. For various reasons, it tends to be. And if it is someone who understands app development, then, you know, you'll have back an engineer who's also working with you. So, you know, the moment it's not just you building your own idea, you need a specification. You need something that's a single point of truth. And I think over time, I've learned more and more the importance of a good specification. It's the same analogy of building a building, right? If you don't describe it accurately, and as a result, you do a bad job building it, it comes back to bite you.
Yeah, it's a long time project, and I think you may see the result of a possible problem with specification when even Apple releases an operating system which may have a bug that basically drives you nuts, and you wonder how somebody could release an operating system which isn't addressing this specific issue. But this can be a simple problem. Somebody in the past didn't specify some part of his work. I'm just giving a hypothetical example. I have no idea why I'm having a problem with Bluetooth on my Mac. But I gather it could be because, Apple has a huge team, and somebody who was working on the Bluetooth connectivity could be doing some specific adjustment, and it wasn't documented well enough for other folks to pick up. So the more complex the project you're working on, the bigger the project is, the significance of keeping the specification in line with the scope, making sure that everybody on the same page working on the project, it's really essential. Okay, obviously you've been following really carefully about the trends in app design these days, as you should do as a CEO of a company. Looking at the app design right now and the trends, you see which ones you welcome and what things you're not really a fan of.
So I think what's happening in general at the moment is that people are realizing that, you know, you're fighting for real estate on a person's screen. There is so much out there and it's getting commoditized, and you really have to be focused on what you want to give in terms of value to the user. So I think the trends in app design that are creating consistency, consistent user experience, consistent a navigation, et cetera, so you can become accustomed to how to use an app, I think those are great. I think the other side of it is you're seeing a lot more of people building things like progressive web apps or applications that will work across your desktop browser and your mobile. And I think one of the errors that is happening is as you're designing that for desktop, but you're also then trying to use it on your mobile, you're not necessarily applying the design principles around making sure you're using the real estate effectively. So, you know, you're starting to see apps which are overly crowded on mobile, and that screen is quite busy and hard to navigate. So I think that's one of the negative things that's happening. And you know, the traditional native app approach where you build a native app for a phone, which worked perfectly for that device, that's kind of going off trend in some ways.
By the way, you personally, on which side of the argument are you? Is it better to create a native app or try to create a cross-platform app? I know this debate is, you know, like...
Yeah, yeah. And I think, again, this is... Yes, absolutely. And I think, the thing is chronology. There's no right answer. Obviously, if money is no object, time is no object, and you want the best experience, native apps the way forward. But if as a startup you're constrained, you want to have one development team that understands both apps and what kind of writes in one language, et cetera, then a hybrid or React Native or progressive web app approach works. So I think you have to, I don't think there's a one size fits all. We work with progressive web apps, React Native apps. It depends on what your business goals are and what your constraints are. Because sometimes people will say, I don't have the ability to build a mobile app and a web application, but I want my app to be accessible through a mobile by someone clicking on an icon on their home screen. And then I'd say, okay, progressive web apps, if you're limited on budget, et cetera, but you know, your primary user is on a web desktop.
So case by case, right?
The
app industry is the best. To navigate this space, you need a directory to look up suppliers and partners, and you need to know who are the best. Visit our marketplace directory at businessofapps.com/marketplace/podcast. And now, back to the show.
Okay, we've covered the topic on the table, which I wanted to talk about. And there are just a few more questions that on this show I ask every guest we've been having for the last year and a half. And here they are. So what smartphone do you have now? Have you been switching between iOS or Android, or just staying one side all the time?
I switched from Android to iOS because we predominantly build iOS apps, and I wanted a phone to show people the apps we built. So I'm fully on iOS at the moment.
For what time? Per year or more?
I'd say it's been about almost 3 years.
Mm. Got it. And so far, so good?
Yes, absolutely. I think, I've always, I switched to Mac before I switched my phones to iOS. So I was comfortable with the Apple ecosystem. And I think it is quite nice that, to be fully across that ecosystem. And so far, so good. I feel like both of them are such, great operating systems that you both are amazing. It's just getting used to web.
Right. This is just a matter of an ecosystem. Like, where do you keep your stuff? Your movies, your music, your photos, your docs, like your life, basically, on which side of this duopoly.
Correct.
Getting back to, before iPhone time, do you remember your first mobile phone?
Absolutely. I can't remember the model name, but it was one of those old Nokias. I remember you could play the snake game on it, it was very, very long ago.
When there are so many mobile games and mobile phones right now, it's really hard to make the case why we did like to play that snake game with Nokia back then. All right, now, if you, for whatever reason, it happens to be you left your smartphone at home, what would be the most missing feature for you?
The maps, whether it's the native apps or maps or Google Maps, 100%. I realize I now look back and I'm like, not long ago, in London, you'd use the A to Z maps with a book, and you'd... I have no idea what I'd do without Google Maps.
Right. I wonder, in a few hundred years, people will be talking about Google Maps like we're talking about star navigation, a couple hundred years ago.
Exactly.
That's amazing. But if you think about what hardware, software features you would like to have in your phone, which are not there yet, but they're kind of coming, or probably something that it's even not on the horizon.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I feel like 5G, I'm very excited about seeing what it results in. There's been a lot of talk, a lot of hype about 5G. And, I'm just curious to see what that speed of internet through your phone or on the move does to us and does to our experience with the phone and interaction with it. And I think the other bit that I'd really like to start seeing is how they tackle health. I think, there's been an area, there's been incredible leaps and bounds with recent changes with challenger banks and mobile apps for banks and so on. But I think health, I always think, I'm like, there's a lot more that mobile technology can do to support you in terms of your health. And also when you take into account wearables and sensors being able to sense certain parameters, but really like to be a health coach, I feel like that would be quite an interesting idea in terms of how mobile phones develop technology around that.
Yeah, I would agree about health completely. And this is like a huge industry is waiting for disruption. Probably just a question, who's going to be first, Apple or Amazon or both? Just to see like what kind of hardware.
They're all racing.
all racing. Because, I've been enjoying the features in my Apple Watch that are really helpful for my health. it kind of became, you know, one of the things in the background you keep track of every once in a while, seeing how what's going on with your calories, your heart, etc. And just a matter of new hardware, new sensors, what stuff will be relevant and actually possible to squeeze into something on your wrist. And you know, being robust, cheap, and still being able to use the thing, charging it once a day, not just every few hours. I would prefer once a week, but we're not there. The chemistry of batteries is not there, I guess.
Exactly.
All right. That was my very final question, but there's even one more, which is, how can people get in touch with you and get more information about what you do?
You can, probably the best way is email me. My email address is ritam, RITAM, at studiographene.com. That's GRAPHENE.com. Or you can also email hello@studiographene.com and it'll still come through to me. Both work.
Terrific. That's great. All right. Thank you for your time and coming on our podcast, Ritam. Thank you.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Bye-bye. Thank you, Art. Bye.
And that was Ritam Gandhi, founder at Studio Graphene. To listen to more episodes, subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts. Just search for Business of Apps and you will find us easily. We release episodes on Mondays, so subscribe. And you'll be able to get new episodes on your smartphone, tablet, or computer, if you're still listening to podcasts on your computer, as soon as we release them. And please don't forget to leave us a review and comment on iTunes. It is highly appreciated. And all episodes will also be available on businessofapps.com. Thank you for listening. See you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Business of Apps podcast. For more, head on over to businessofapps.com.